Yeah, there are 400,000 words in the English language, and there are 7 of them you can't say on television. What a ratio that is. 399,993 to 7. They must really be bad.
That, of course, is George Carlin, setting up his infamous Filthy Words comedy monologue. I say infamous not because of Carlin's bit, but because Pacifica Station in New York City, WBAI, aired the monologue in its entirety in October of 1973. What ensued after that broadcast is the subject for this week's show. This is From the Vault, the Pacifica Radio Archives program that brings our history out of the vault and onto the radio. Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Radio Archives. In this half hour, we will hear from The Carlin Case, a wonderful collection of interviews produced and conducted by Joe Cuomo and Mickey Waldman for WBAI in 1978. The interviews are with Paul Gorman, the man who aired the monologue on WBAI, former FCC commissioners, a lawyer for the National Association of Broadcasters, and even a minister. You'll also hear, of course, George Carlin's monologue and readings from letters and court decisions. Throughout the program, you will hear a lot of beeps because although this documentary has aired in the past, beep-free, no less, there is no possible way we can air this material today without bringing down the Pacifica Radio Network and every single station that chooses to air this program. But we can air the program beeping every single word that George Carlin said was too dirty to say on the air, and even a couple more just to be on the safe side.
Words, words, words in that old Bible. How much of truth remains?
If Howard Moody, Senior Minister, Judson Memorial Church.
And if my lips pronounce them, would not my life be changed?
November 28th, 1973. To the Federal Communications Commission, Washington, D.C. Gentlemen, on October 30th in the early afternoon, from approximately 1:30 p.m. to 2:30 p.m., while driving in my car, I tuned to radio station WBAI in New York City. I heard, among other obscenities, the following words. And a whole list of others. This was supposed to be part of a comedy monologue. Whereas I can perhaps understand an X-rated phonograph records being sold for private use, I certainly cannot understand the broadcast of same over the air that, supposedly, you control. Any child could have been turning the dial and tuned in to that garbage. Some time back I read that topless radio stations were fined for suggestive phrases. If you fine for suggestions, should not this station lose its license entirely for such blatant disregard for the public ownership of the airwaves? Can you say this is a responsible radio station that demonstrates a responsibility to the public for its license? I'd like to know, gentlemen, just what you're going to do about this outrage. And by copy, I'm asking our elected officials the same thing. Incidentally, my young son was with me when I heard the above, and unfortunately, he can corroborate what was heard. Yours truly, John H. Douglas, New York City. Copies, Senator James Buckley, Senator John Pastore, Morality and Media.
I happened during that program to be discussing the power of words and the way words are used.
WBAI producer Paul Gorman.
I happened, as I remember, to be discussing the way in which political dialogue at that time, and certainly in years before that, in the 60s and early 70s, that political dialogue was doing great damage to words, in my view, and that the power of words and that the importance of being careful about words and that the integrity of words was being lost. And I remember raising, for example, the fact that if you looked on either side of the great political struggle of that age, if you looked to the government, you heard, for example, the Central Intelligence Agency, interesting words in themselves, use the words extermination with extreme prejudice to describe killing somebody, or talked about national security, that the bombs that were being dropped on Vietnam at that time were being dropped by an agency of government which described itself as the Defense Department, etc., etc., etc. There were many other examples. Of protective reaction strike was what bombing people's heads and killing them was described as. One could find the same thing among those people who were opposing those very actions by the government. The most immediate example that springs to mind at that time was the phrase, off the pig, which seemed to me not to be so different in its moral effect than extermination with extreme prejudice. Not being able to say kill, not being able to say person, but off the pigs. And loose uses of the word revolution, etc., etc. So the discussion was about the power of words and the moral consequence of words and the fear we have of words and the way words arise from the culture and the way the culture redefines itself through its use of words. That was roughly the topic of the program as it was being conducted by myself and by listeners who were calling in live spontaneously. That was also being supplemented, I should say, by various readings of authors who had talked about words, principally some excerpts of essays by George Orwell. Inevitably, the topic came to what we call dirty words. And the discussion turned on the issue, is there such a thing as a dirty word? Or are there just dirty actions or dirty deeds? And so we moved inevitably into the area of indecency and obscenity. And one caller, I think I remember calling up and say, why is it that the word or a word that's used to describe the act of love is also used as an insult? So we discussed what the FCC now is trying to describe as indecent words. At that moment, there was just perfect appropriateness of a monologue by George Carlin entitled Seven Dirty Words You Can't Say on Television, I think was the title. And artistically, it was the moment where that had to be played for the overall effect of the program. And it also raised, in a different way than I had been raising them, in a dramatic way, and even in a provocative way, which I understood, and even introduced what we call a disclaimer, which is letting people know that they might hear some words they would find offensive, but nevertheless was raising that issue in a different way than had been raised in the course of the program, in a dramatic way, by the repetition of those words, by making people listen and laugh and feel whatever hypocrisy and double standards and confusion lies between the use of words and the actions they describe.
It's an interesting word, the word it leads a double life, the word. First of all, it means sometimes, most of the time, what does it mean? It means to make love, right?
We're going to make love, eh? We're going to make love, right?
And it also means the beginning of life. It's the act that begins life. So there's the word hanging around with words like love and life. And yet, on the other hand, it's also a word that we really use to hurt each other with, man. It's a heavy, it's one that you save toward the end of the argument, right? So you finally can't make, ah, you, man, it's a stupid you and everybody that looks like you.
From the conclusion to the declaratory order issued by the Federal Communications Commission, February 21st, 1975. The commission concludes that words such as and depict sexual and excretory activities and organs in a manner patently offensive by contemporary community standards for the broadcast medium and are, accordingly, indecent when broadcast on radio or television.
I don't think the FCC should have any power over what words are used over the radio. But I should also say that I respect the fact that there are people in the audience and in the community who find certain words offensive and would not want their children to hear those words. For an example, if one of you listening right now to me were walking down the street with your six-year-old son or daughter, and you passed a group of teenagers for whom dirty words was a kind of a way of asserting your masculinity if they were all boys. And you didn't want your daughter or young son to hear those words. The first thing you would do would take them by the hand and cross the street and take them out of earshot. I respect the rights of people to see dirty words as a moral question and an aesthetic question and an issue of upbringing. You know, I wouldn't for a minute deny their right, or I wouldn't for a minute disrespect that. And that's why I issued that disclaimer. But I think those people who were concerned with that have to ask themselves the question, who should determine whether those words are going to be used? Should there be a body of people appointed by the President of the United States, subject to all sorts of political pressures, who sit in judgment of words, trying to determine whether one word, which means the same thing as another word, can be said? Why is it possible to say one rather than the other? So the power, in my view, should not rest with the FCC. The power should rest with the community. The community has the right to, among other things, withdraw commercial support from the station that uses words that the community itself finds objectionable. The community has the freedom to take its own actions and make its own complaints. But as for the FCC, they should not tell the people what they should say, nor should they tell them what they should hear. The people should have the right to define their own culture, and that we are increasingly in a situation where culture is being imposed on the people, whether it be role models and stereotypes, whether it be attitudes towards authoritarianism and violence, images of gender, and so forth. Increasingly, we're in a situation where the people are not defining their own culture. And that is what I would call a form, really, of cultural imperialism by profit-making institutions called the commercial media. And that a deep political issue is at stake in all of this, as to whether or not the people, through their own instruments, in this case a listener-sponsored non-commercial radio station, are going to have the opportunity to define their own culture. Language, words, being one of the principal instruments of culture.
In this particular instance,
former FCC Commissioner Nicholas Johnson, commissioner from 1966 to 1973,
Out of the city of New York City, and with the vast audience of WBAI, you got what? One letter of complaint on this program. That, presumably, is not enough to warrant keeping a program off the air, because deciding not to program something, a form of censorship, or whether or not you want to use that pejorative word, but I mean, deciding that something cannot be broadcast on the air is a really pretty darn heavy decision. Now, there will be times when presumably you'll arrive at that decision. But are you going to do it on the basis of one outraged citizen? Probably not. What if instead of having one letter, you'd had a petition signed by 500 people? What if it were 5,000? At what point do you have enough public involvement that the station really should respond to it? Well, there is no easy way of answering that.
The following organizations have filed either jointly or separately amicus briefs in support of WBAI Pacifica: the National Association of Broadcasters, National Radio Broadcasters Association, CBS, NBC, ABC, the Public Broadcasting Service, Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press, Radio TV News Directors Association, Committee for Open Media, the Writers Guild of America, the Motion Picture Association of America, the Authors League of America, and the American Civil Liberties Union. In addition to this list, the Justice Department has chosen to assist in arguing our case before the U.S. Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court will have to decide, basically,
Erwin Krasnow, lawyer for the National Association of Broadcasters,
whether radio and television are so different from newspapers, magazines, and other forms of communication, including film, that they justify more extensive regulation on the theory that radio and television are more powerful, more intrusive, more coming into the home, harder to turn off. The WBAI case is commonly misunderstood because a number of people who have heard about the case aren't aware of the facts. The case involved, as far as the facts, here is a non-commercial educational station carrying a public affairs program to an adult audience on a weekday afternoon at a time when children are less likely to be in the audience, talking about the use of words and using humor and satire to illustrate people's reactions to certain words. It seems under these facts is that the station in no way is appealing to purient interest without any redeeming social value.
From the King James Version of the Bible.
Act of 1934.
These
Howard
first
Moody,
two are from
Senior
First
Minister,
Samuel,
Judson
25.
Memorial Church.
So more and more also do God unto the enemies of David, if I leave of all that pertains to him by the morning light, any that against the wall. 25:34. Surely there had not been left unto Nabal by the morning light any that against the wall. 1 Kings 14:10. 2 Kings 9:8. Will cut off him that against the wall. 2 Kings 18:27, Isaiah 36:12, hath he not sent me to the men which sit on the wall, that they may eat their own dung and drink their own with you? Isaiah 32:12, they shall lament for the pleasant fields and for the fruitful vine. Ezekiel 23:3, and they committed whoredoms in Egypt. They committed whoredoms in their youth. There were their breasts pressed, and there they bruised the of their virginity. And Ezekiel 23:21, thus thou callest to remembrance the lewdness of they youth, in bruising they by the Egyptians for the paps of thy youth. I think the fact that those kinds of passages from the scriptures are forbidden to be spoken on public radio is a testimony to the ludicrousness of these laws, that they would cut out so much of great literature, among which is the Bible and its passages. For example, if you take the word which comes from the Old English frarere, which is to tuck into the ground, the farmer tucked the seed into the ground. Now, if you understand it like that, and yet it's such a horrible thing that we talk about, you know, and we don't want to say in front of our children, rather than telling our children its derivations and what it means, the word when it is usually used as an epithet and not understood to be the word that it is. So a lot of it's all in the mind. That's where a lot of this stuff is. It's in the mind. My own feeling about obscenity is that that when we confine obscenity, only talk about those things which have to do with nudity or with sexual intercourse or any of those kinds of matters, and do not see obscenity in a larger framework, and that is those pictures and those situations being obscene. I mean, that, for example, words that are obscene, the word nigger, coming from the lips of a Bull Connors in hatred against the black people who were demonstrating in the South, that's an obscene word. Even if that definition of obscenity were adhered to in this country, and that was declared to be what was obscene rather than what we now declare obscene, I still would not countenance or want to see any kind of censorship of those words and those pictures. When you start down that road, no matter where you start or who you start with, it's going to end up with somebody else. And finally with you.
Words, words, words in that old Bible. How much of truth remains if I only understood them, and if my lips pronounced them, would not my life be changed?
At the time of this documentary, the case was on its way to the Supreme Court. It was argued on April 18 and 19, 1978, and decided on July 3rd of the same year. The court overturned the lower appeals court decision, in the end rejecting Pacifica's arguments, saying the FCC's authority to prescribe this particular broadcast is not invalidated by the possibility that its construction of the statute may deter certain hypothetically protected broadcasts containing patently offensive references to sexual and excretory activities. As well, the opinion written by Justice John Paul Stevens went on to say, the First Amendment does not prohibit all governmental regulation that depends on the content of speech. The content of respondents' broadcast, which was vulgar, offensive, and shocking, is not entitled to absolute constitutional protection in all contexts. It is therefore necessary to evaluate the FCC's action in light of the context of that broadcast. The opinion ended simply enough with this: we simply hold that when the Commission finds that a pig has entered the parlor, the exercise of its regulatory power does not depend on proof that the pig is obscene. The judgment of the Court of Appeals is reversed. And here is the original excerpt from George Carlin's Filthy Words monologue that aired on WBAI on October 30th, 1973.
I want to tell you something about words that I think is important. I love, as I say, they're my work, they're my play, they're my passion. Words are all we have, really. We have thoughts, but thoughts are fluid, you know. And then we assign a word to a thought, and we're stuck with that word for that thought. So be careful with words. I like to think, yeah, the same words, you know, that hurt can heal. It's a matter of how you pick them. There are some people that aren't into all the words. There are some people that would have you not use certain words. Yeah, there are 400,000 words in the English language, and there are 7 of them you can't say on television. What a ratio that is. 399,993 to 7. They must really be bad. They'd have to be outrageous to be separated from a group that large. All of you over here, you 7. Bad word. That's what they told us they were, remember?
That's a bad word.
No bad words. Bad thoughts. Bad intentions. And words. You know the 7, don't you, that you can't say on television? Huh? Those are the heavy 7. Those are the ones that'll infect your soul, curve your spine, and keep the country from winning the war. Wow. And doesn't even belong on the list, you know? Yeah. It's such a friendly sounding word. Sounds like a nickname, right? Hey, come here, man. Me toots, 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 man. Sounds like a snack, doesn't it, huh? Yeah. Yes, I know, it is, right, a snack. But I don't mean your sexist snack. I mean new Nabisco, and new cheese, and corn, and pizza, and sesame, onion, tater. Bet you can't eat just one. Wow. That's true, I usually switch off. But I mean, that word does not belong on the list. Actually, none of the words belong on the list, but you can understand why some of them are there. I mean, I'm not completely insensitive to people's feelings. You know, I can dig why some of those words got on the list. Like, those are heavyweight words, you know. Oh, there's a lot going on there, man. Besides the literal translation and the emotional feeling, I mean, they're just busy words. You know? There's a lot of syllables to contend with. And those K's, those are aggressive sounds. They jump out at you, man. Like an assault on you, you know? So I can dig that. Now, we mentioned earlier, of course, and two of the other four-letter Anglo-Saxon words are and which go together, of course, but forget that. Little accidental humor I throw there. The reason that are on the list is that a long time ago, certain ladies said, those are the two I'm not going to say. I don't mind and but P and C are out. P and C are out. Which led to such stupid sentences as, okay, you, I'm going to tinkle now. And of course, the word the word I don't really, well, here's some more accidental humor. I don't really want to get into that now. Because I think it takes too long. But I do mean that. I mean, I think the word is a very important word. It's the beginning of life, and yet it's a word we use to hurt one another quite often. And people much wiser than I have said, I'd rather have my son watch a film with two people making love than two people trying to kill one another. And I, of course, can agree. It's a great sentiment. I wish I knew who said it first, and I agree with that. But I'd like to take it a step further. I'd like to substitute the word for the word kill in all those movie cliches we grew up with, right?
Okay, Sheriff, we're gonna fuck you now. But we're gonna fuck it slow.
So maybe next year I'll have a whole fucking rap on that word. I hope so. There are two-way words. Those are the seven you can never say on television. Under any circumstances, you just cannot say them. Ever, 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 not even clinically. You cannot weave them in on the panel with Doc and Ed and Johnny. I mean, it's just impossible. Forget those seven. They're out. But there are some two-way words, those double-meaning words. Remember the ones you giggled at in sixth grade? And the cock crowed three times.
Hey, the cock crowed three times. Hey, it's in the Bible.
There are some two-way words, like it's okay for Kurt Gowdy to say, Roberto Clemente has two balls on him. But he can't say, I think he hurt his on that play, Tony, don't you? He's holding them. He must have hurt them, by God.